Hello, this is the No Film School podcast, and you're listening to Oakley Anderson Moore. Today we're talking about the relationship between the director and the composer. No Film School's coverage of South by Southwest 2016 is brought to you by Song Freedom. If you're tired of a limited selection of music that's overpriced, or you just can't stomach the generic elevator music anymore, then you need to check out Song Freedom. Register for free to get on their mailing list for the upcoming announcement of thousands of additional songs and a new pricing structure that just might blow your mind. Asperger's R Us is a coming-of-age documentary that premiered at South by Southwest and got picked up by Netflix. It follows best friends Noah, New Michael, Jack, and Ethan of the comedy troupe titled Asperger's R Us. They use their comedy as a way to confront the developmental disorder that is Asperger's, and it's a way for them to communicate with the outside world. It's a very heartfelt story, and it follows them at a really big crossroads in their lives. We sat down in Austin with the director and the composer to talk about their collaboration and how they were able to come up with a score for the film that embraced laughing with the main characters and not at them. And I was excited to share a few cues from the original soundtrack as part of our discussion. Welcome to the No Film School podcast. This is Oakley Anderson Moore. I'm here at the South by Southwest Film Festival. I'm sitting down with some filmmakers from Asperger's R Us. We've got the director, Alex Lehman, and the composer, Crystal Grooms Mangano.
Hey.
Hello.
Thank you guys so much for being here with us.
Nice to be here.
Yeah, thank you. Congratulations on your premiere.
Thank you.
So for the people listening at home, just so that they know who is who and who's talking, do me a favor and just introduce yourselves. And then while you're at it, tell me, Alex, how you met Crystal and when it gets to you, vice versa.
Sure. My name's Alex Lehman. I've been a cinematographer by trade for a long time. And I was making this documentary a little bit on the side. And here it is. We're in South By. And I met Crystal when we started doing the scoring. That's basically, but I'm Alex. I'm the boy in this conversation.
It'll be easy to keep us apart, hopefully. So I'm Crystal, the composer for the film. And I met Alex through our mutual friend, Sean Bradley, who's one of the producers on the film. He introduced me to Alex and we started talking about the score and went from there.
Great. So Asperger's R Us, the documentary, is this coming of age story about a Boston comedy troupe who have Asperger's. And, you know, I'd love to talk about your relationship with as the composer and director. But before you get there, just I'd love to hear, you know, you've been a cinematographer for almost a decade and the film was produced by the Duplass brothers. So there's all this experience, but this is your first feature. Uh-huh. So I'd love to hear about why this one, what about this project compelled you to make it? What's the genesis, the origin of this?
The origin was I was writing a script and I was trying to includes some Asperger's stuff, you know, a character who might have been a little Asperger's. And I needed to do some research to know what I was writing about. I came across an article about these guys and it immediately opened my eyes. It made me realize I don't know that much about Asperger's because apparently there's these four guys, they're doing stand-up comedy. I thought they were supposed to have trouble, you know, relating socially to people and, you know, have communication issues. And here they are getting up on a stage doing comedy. I don't understand. So I reach out to them. Well, first, actually, I did a little research, you know, looked at some of their clips on YouTube. I was like, okay, they're funny. Their comedy's absurd. It's not for everybody, but it's for me. I get it. I think they're funny. I reach out to them and say, let's do this. Let's forget my script. I wrote a script that was just whatever. You guys have a very interesting story. I want to make a short doc about you. And I went out there to make a short doc about them. And then, as I guess it happens, sometimes you go, oh, there's a lot here. There are other storylines. And I think that, you know, the characters are enough to really, you know, take you through a full story. So lo and behold, I was making a feature documentary instead of writing a mediocre comedy.
So at what point did you bring Crystal on, and, you know, what were you looking for, you know, from the music before you met her?
I'm going to be very honest. Up until now, I haven't been. This is all off. this is all off the record, right?
Right. Yes. No one will.
Yeah. I forgot to push record.
Great. Anyways, this is just a conversation we're having.
Yeah.
With microphones.
Yeah.
And headphones. I had some temp music that some people sent me and they had said, feel free to include it in there if you want. There's some, you know, pretty good stuff, pretty cool stuff. It helped me edit. I was really feeling the film and the editing and the storytelling with some temp stuff that was given to me. And my very good filmmaker friend and turned producer on this film, Sean Bradley, said, "Hey man, this is good, but I think we need some original score. Let me introduce you to my friend Crystal." And I spoke to Crystal and she said, and again, I was funny. At this point, the Duplass brothers weren't involved. I was paying for this out of pocket. I was using my income as a DP, as a cameraman, just kind of throwing those checks into this personal project, flying out to Boston, you know, trying to make this on the cheap. And then and then all of a sudden, I'm like, okay, you're right. We do need better music, but what am I going to do? So I was not going to hire a composer to make a full-on thing right away. But I talked to Crystal. She's like, I'm going to give you a theme that you can kind of use in a few places, and like it'll help beef up what you've already got. And she started sending some stuff and it sounded amazing. And we just immediately we threw out the old plan and said, we got to make this work, because your music needs to carry this documentary. She just kept writing, kept composing, kept recording, and we just turned this into the Crystal show. That's what, by the way, that could maybe be your DJ name or your company name, okay, or something. The Crystal, right, show. I like that idea.
I'll work on that.
Because probably when you work with directors, other filmmakers in the future, and they think they're coming to you for one song, what's going to happen is exactly what happened with us here, which is they're going to get a taste of what you bring to the film. And all of a sudden they're going to say, you know what, actually just take the movie and just, you know, give it back to me when it's 100 times better. And we'll call it the Crystal Show.
Well, that's very nice. Thanks. For me personally, I just, you know, I started working on it intending to give them some thematic material that they could use throughout the film. And I just started working on it and I just fell in love with the movie and I didn't want to stop writing. I mean, it was probably the best experience I've ever had as any sort of job. You know, I've never looked forward to when I got a chance to work on it as much as I did on this. I just smiled throughout the whole thing while I was working on it. The guys in the film just made me laugh. I thought they were so funny. And I just was so excited about this documentary. And so I think it worked out for both of us. And I think it was nice that Alex and I kind of saw it the same way. I think we understand the guys very similar. And so I think my approach reflected Alex's view of the troupe as well. So,
And so when Alex says that you gave him a theme, so how did you decide what this theme would be? Was there something that Alex said in conversation, like, this is how I feel it says it should sound? Or did you just look at the source material? Tell us about that.
You know, it was kind of a combination of a bunch of things. I had heard what they were using for the temp. So I knew what they were liking and leaning towards already. We had a conversation about it. And then ultimately, I turned off the temp and just started fresh. And just tried to capture the energy of the troupe. And that was the start of the process.
Yeah, why don't we go ahead and listen to one piece of music from the film?
Okay.
So we've got First Rehearsal. And
okay.
Maybe you could give us a little backstory on what this piece we're going to hear is.
Sure.
About.
So this one plays fairly early in the film. And then comes back thematically as the troupe is rehearsing. So this was a scene where they're trying to find a place to rehearse because they don't have one. And so they're you know, moving around town. And with this one, I wanted to capture the fun spirit of how enthusiastic they were into this, but also how quirky and absurd the comedy is, and that it's just kind of a very off-kilter feel where it's fun but slightly uncomfortable at the same time.
Cool. Let's take a listen.
Thank you.
That is so cool. So did Alex say use these instruments, or was that like, you know, how you came up with that sound based on your own? Or?
That was pretty much on my own.
I don't know what instruments were used.
Yeah, what were those? We're hearing all kinds of sounds, and there's totally conveyed what you were describing. Like, but what is that?
Sure. There's a lot of percussion, a lot of different types of kind of eclectic percussion. The whole instrumental ensemble is kind of unusual, which is where I kind of started. I was trying to find sounds that maybe weren't necessarily used together commonly, but that worked for me when I put them together. And so you've got percussion, and then the melodic line is on a banjo. You've got trombones, just very kind of bright and fun. I just wanted it to be, you know, it's not taking itself too seriously and a little wacky, I guess.
Wacky is definitely the right tone. And you know what? One of the trickiest things, if I might add, is we were always trying to find that line between make it fun and wacky and a little silly, but never make it feel like we're making fun of them or laughing at them. And that, it's a very fine line to walk.
It was. That was definitely something that I kept in mind throughout the entire process, was trying to find ways to highlight the comedy in a way that you're with them. You're not, you know, it's like you're part of the team and you're feeling what they're feeling, and that you're not just watching someone and laughing.
Yeah. Laughing with them.
Yeah, exactly.
At their comedy.
Or at their comedy, exactly. Yeah. Either or, but I just wanted you to really feel like you understood what they were doing.
And once you've known the guys for a while, it's a lot easier to tell when they're making a joke. When you don't know them at the beginning, there are times where their comedy is so dry or so absurd that you don't know, is it okay to laugh or not? So the music really helped cue that, especially early on, until the audience became more accustomed with the characters.
It's so interesting. It's such a big part of documentary when you're following the subject is, you know, finding that balance of figuring out who they are and when, you know, not to always. I mean, the audience is always watching whoever the subject is, so there's always that element. But
yeah, you don't know. Yeah, and actually, this scene that we're just talking about was literally the first day of filming for me. I got off a plane, took a subway ride over to this mall, met them at the mall, had my camera and my backpack, my suitcase. One of them was carrying my suitcase, my duffel bag, during most of the scene.
I didn't realize that was your duffel bag. I thought he was just packing around a duffel bag.
You're getting the scoop here.
All right.
This is the important stuff. It will go on IMDb, trivia at some point, and that'll be important. But for anybody listening to this podcast, you got the scoop first. That's my duffel bag,
nice.
Not Noah's duffel bag. But yeah, I was trying to keep up with these dudes, and I didn't know at this point. There were a lot of jokes that they made on that first day of shooting, which is really, it's probably like a 3 or 4 minute segment in the movie, which blows my mind when I go back to think about the fact that my first day of filming with them, 3 to 4 minutes of that actually made the doc. Very fortunate, but also I can only try to put myself back there now and remember that I had no idea what they were talking about for so much of this stuff. And you know, in the doc, it comes a little bit later. So we have a little more context and we've gotten to know the guys a little more. But only once I was editing the footage did I start realizing, oh, that was a joke. And that was a joke. And that was a joke. And they're the kinds of things that having gotten to know them, I understood. So Crystal had that very important task of cueing the audience, cueing the comedy, just letting people know this is what you need to be feeling until it becomes a little bit more natural. Because we are, you know, these are 4 unique characters. That's why you want to watch it, is because they're not like other people you know, but there is that little period of getting to know them and trying to understand.
So when you're trying to find the right, that walk the line, that find that balance, the back and forth between you on the music, I mean, you know, was there ever a point at which, you know, you would send something and maybe you, Alex, would think, oh, maybe it's not quite right. Well, what is that back and what was that like for you guys? You know, if you wanted to communicate that maybe something you wanted to be different or?
70%, I would say probably about 70% of what Crystal sent me, I had no notes on whatsoever. And it was just like, great, put it in the movie. You nailed it. And then the other 30%, it would just be, I'm musically challenged. So I would say, I think it needs to feel more this way, or the timing of something is not right. But I certainly didn't have any of the words and the knowledge of music to understand why things needed to be certain ways or how to fix them.
Yeah. You weren't like tempo, pitch, blah,
I'm sorry,
blah, blah.
What is right. that?
Yeah, I mean, and so you were able to understand like what right. about, you know, what and he was talking about?
I think a lot of our
she had no idea what I was talking about. But
I just said yes, and I said fine, I'll send you something else, and then
she'd send me the same thing, but the next day I liked it.
Exactly, it's a wonderful process. It's great. Yeah.
Thank you, Crystal, for making those changes.
Yeah, it's fantastic now. No, I think a lot of our changes were from scenes, as he was talking before, like as I was getting to know the characters in the film, there were places where I couldn't quite tell if it was supposed to be funny or not. And as I, you know, as I worked through the score, I started to definitely get a much better sense of what was funny, what was a joke, what was serious. And so then as I worked, it got easier. And I think that's when I started to hit a few more.
The serious jokes were the most difficult because you needed the cowbell and the guitar and the xylophone. That was the combination for the serious jokes, right?
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. If you need to be serious, use a cowbell and a xylophone.
But if it's a serious joke,
then you add the guitar.
Yes. Guitars are hilarious.
Yeah, well, let's take a listen to another clip. I've also got Aliens at the Show. Can you give us a little setup for what we're about to listen to?
Yeah, so this this part is when Noah, one of the guys in the troupe, is talking about how he has the plans for the show, and he's hoping that it sells out so much that if aliens come down to try and see the show, they'll get turned away because there's no room for them. And it was in this scene that I really felt like I started to understand Noah. And I actually then went back and changed some stuff that I had done for him earlier because I felt like this fit him better. And it's also kind of in the very much in the same palette as what we listened to earlier.
Cool, let's take a listen.
The audience gives you positive reinforcement, and that's awesome. But if they don't, you get it from succeeding at your goal of being hilarious for your own sake. And so if your material is good and you don't screw it up live, then you won. And I love winning almost as much as I love swinging. We want to sell out Earth. We want aliens to come to the show and be turned away because it's full. But we're realistic, so if the aliens get in, that's okay too.
So yeah, that's Noah setting his expectations for the show, and it actually basically explains who Noah is very concisely. And I love there's that sound that, you know, the spaceshipy sound for me. I was always like, oh cool, like she got this spaceshipy sound into it, and like makes me think of the aliens and everything. This was the only time there was Discord it wasn't even Discord, but we had a little more difficulty communicating. I kept saying, let's just have a little bit more alien sound. And she sent stuff back. I'm like, is she even listening to me? Like, more of the alien sound. Give me more, like, the alien sound. Like, what? Why isn't she? And, you know, very, very kindly just writing emails like, yeah, I think, but no, the other alien sound. And then finally,
We had a lot of very diplomatic emails going back and forth about this.
She probably wanted to kill me.
I just couldn't figure out. I'd get off the phone and I'm like, okay, I think I've, or check the email or whatever. And it's like, okay, I think I've got it. I think I know what he wants. And then I do it and it's like, nope, that wasn't it. I don't know what it is.
At this point, she's like, dude, just release the movie. It's good. Like, you're like, we're good. Like, we're good. This is great. Like, stop. Like, and you know, she's like, You let this baby go out into the world now. But I was like, no, we got to get the alien
more
sound.
Aliens.
We got to get the alien sound.
No, it was great. It's very, very open. We had to get it right.
We had to get it right, and we did, because it turns out it was a train whistle, not an alien sound. But if you go back and listen to Noah on the swing set, you know, talking about, he talks about the aliens, And that train whistle came in, and I always associated that with like a, you know, flying saucer sound from like a 1950s movie. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. Yeah. Do that again. Did we get that clean? We're going to use that for our next movie. That's really good.
Just hire me to do all the musical instruments.
Yeah. I think that's perfect.
But that's what happened. And so she finally wrote me back. She's like, are you talking about the train whistle? I was like, yeah, the train whistle. What alien sound? I meant the train whistle. Shit.
Well, I think it just shows like that people can have completely different interpretations of what's going on and still like what's happening. And, you know, as I was working on it, I guess I was thinking of it more as the whistle, and I honestly didn't ever hear it as a spaceship sound.
No, but and that makes sense. You know, as soon as I heard that, I realized it made so much more sense because trains are a big theme in our film. Thematically, there's lots of shots of trains. One of our characters has a perseveration for trains, which means he knows all these things about trains. He can tell you like the train times for trains in Brazil. Like he's got all these things memorized. It's, you know, part of his Asperger's. So the train thing makes perfect sense, but I'm still going to consider it
a
spaceship.
Actually, now that I officially know what you were meaning by that, it makes so much sense.
You should relabel that in your library.
I will. I will call that the spaceship sound.
Yes.
Okay.
Song Freedom was the first and only music licensing company to offer top 40 hits from every major record label and publisher to event filmmakers. Now, they're creating something special for all kinds of filmmakers. If you're tired of a limited selection of music that's overpriced, or you just can't stomach the generic elevator music anymore, then you need to check out Song Freedom. Register for free to get on their mailing list for the upcoming announcement of thousands of additional songs and a new pricing structure that will blow your mind in just 2 weeks. Once you're registered with Song Freedom, you'll also get news about their next big giveaway of over $50,000 in free gear and other products. Don't miss the most exciting thing to happen to filmmakers since the DSLR. Go to songfreedom.com and register today. It's incredibly easy. So yeah, how different is it, you know, when you're composing for a documentary and like, were you asking her to come in and have like cue-oriented things? I mean, I'd just love to hear about the differences in this since it's a doc instead of like the narrative experience.
I will say this very quickly. She crushed it and she told me places where I had temp music where I shouldn't have anything. And she told me places where I shouldn't have anything, where I didn't have anything, where maybe I should consider having something. And I said, have at it and show me. And again, easily 70% right without me giving any feedback, but maybe even more than that.
And how would you know, you know, when you found a place that needed or didn't need music?
I think it would just based on how I felt watching the scene, like the places where you never want the music to take you out of the story by any means. And so there were places where I just felt like you didn't need it. The troupe didn't need any help being funny in that moment, or it would be more compelling to not have music and that you might actually get drawn in closer to the character without music. And so really for me, it's just how I feel when I watch the scene and whether or not I think music would make it better or worse. For as far as the approaching a documentary versus a narrative film, I think for me it was, again, similar to what we were talking about before, but just I felt like I handled it a little more delicately just because I was very aware that these are real people. You know, with a narrative, it's a story. You're creating these things and you're coming up with, like, these people don't exist. They're completely fictionalized, but in this documentary, they're very real. I don't know, it made me work harder, I think, to really understand them.
Did you, as far as when you had finalized, these are all the cues, and this is definitely it, were you creating music at home on your own system? At any point, did you record with live musicians and, you know, wax poetic on that part of the process?
Yeah, I did a bunch of different things recording. I did most of the work at home, and then I did a little bit of recording at home, and then there's another composer that I work for, Mark Leggett, who has a beautiful studio and is extremely generous and lets me record there if he's not using it. So we did record all the live drums and percussion out there with a good friend of mine, Ray Brinker, who's a fantastic drummer and just a really nice guy. So he came out for a half a day and we recorded the drums, and it was I just loved being able to put that into the score because it really just adds so much life to the music. It's, you know, you hear something live and everything else all of a sudden falls flat. And so you've got to really step up everything else that's already there. And it was just, and it was just a really fun experience recording him as well.
Those drums were a game changer. And I will be totally honest, when she reached out and said, "Hey, this is great, but for the final mix, I'm getting you some real percussion," I knew what it meant, but I didn't know how much it would affect the quality of the film. So I said, "I trust you," but I, you know, part of me. So I have a background in cinematography. There are times when DPs will bullshit a little bit and say, "I need these lenses," or "I need this light. Like, this is like, this camera is the only camera this movie can be shot on." And like, have I done that? Maybe once or twice, but I'm mostly a no bullshit DP. Actually, maybe I've never done that, to be honest. One time in film school, I wanted to shoot 35 millimeters so badly that I told the director, I was like, "Well, if we can afford it, let's shoot 35 mil instead of Super 16. But I've never done that professionally, and I will never do that professionally.
But you do just know of that happening. I mean, it happens.
Yeah, people sometimes
it's
embellish.
It's a bargaining, so sometimes you have to overshoot anyhow.
For sure. Or you just get a little bit hyper. You just get focused. You know, you get this tunnel vision of like this one little thing that's needed, and you don't realize how it affects the rest of the film budgetarily or schedule wise or whatever. So when somebody of a different discipline, like a composer, tells me, "We need live drums," I'm thinking to myself, "This sounds great. What are you talking about?" But when you build up that trust with them, whether it's a DP or an editor or a composer, if you build that trust and they say, "We need this," you go, "Okay, I trust you. Let's see what, you know, this is on you. Let's see what happens." And she was right. Really, these live drums really changed everything. So
they really did lift up the score. And I like to try and find ways to use as little as possible to go as far as possible. And so I knew that for this particular score, drums would really make this go as far as possible without, you know, we didn't need to bring in a bunch of players. We didn't need to do all this other stuff. But if we just did that, it would be a million times better.
Thank you, Ray.
Exactly. Ray's amazing.
Yeah, why don't we take a listen? We've got one more song here. It's called New Material.
Okay,
is this a good time to listen to that?
Sure. So New Material is at the very end of the show, and it reprises actually some music that you heard very early on as when you're seeing footage of them much younger and just kind of meeting each other and at camp. And so it kind of, we use this here, and it really kind of brings it full circle as far as getting kind of back to the heart of this troupe and why they're friends and why they're going to continue to be friends.
All right, here it is. Before we play this, you mentioned how this incorporated some, you know, similar thematic elements to the other music. How important is that? You know, is that something every composer should be looking to do, like having recurring themes that repeat themselves over the course of the film? Or what's your ideas on that?
I think it probably depends on the composer and depends on the project. For me, I love to use that because it helps me keep everything in the same realm. And it helps me find those turning points within the characters, not just within the film, but within each character. So actually that piece that we just listened to, the very beginning is, it starts actually with the theme for New Michael, one of the comedians in the troupe, and his dad. And his story is that story is really big in the film. And at the end, there's just a really great moment that they share. And so I think using themes like that also help the audience connect. And you hear those things and you remember that, you know, that beginning scene with his dad, and it helps you relate and follow.
It was his leitmotif. That's my one word.
Good job. Nice.
Nice. That's the one word I know.
For our listeners, what does that mean?
It is the...
I mean, I know, but...
Yeah, we all know.
It's the theme for a character. So, like, the most famous is probably Jaws, you know, something like that, where you hear it and you know exactly what it means.
I learned the term leitmotif with Flight of the Valkyries.
Oh, yeah, there you go.
Yes, because every time there was the Here Come the Valkyries, da 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 da.
Yeah.
And in that opera, you always knew, like, oh, here they come.
Exactly.
It's going to be great.
Yeah.
So, yeah, and Jaws is probably, yeah, you're right, it's got to be the most famous two-note.
Exactly. So simple yet conveys so much.
But that's what the new Michael theme is. And it's I'm always crying by this time in the movie, and it's really hard, and the music makes me, the music reminds me that I need to be crying. You know, this is all subconscious, but it happens, and it's powerful stuff. And what is that, by the way, what's that instrument? That sounds like, it always makes me think of the opening of Jack, you know, that Robin Williams movie where he's growing up four times as fast as everyone else.
I remember the movie.
It's xylophony, but like it's water glass xylophony. Like what is that instrument that you're using?
It's actually a bunch of manipulated electric pianos is kind of what is going on there. So using different effects on them to change the sound just a little bit so it sounds a little different. So it sounds maybe like you don't actually know what it is, along with, I believe there is some marimba in there. Using the combination of different types of pianos was what I was doing there.
So I guess what I'll end on is I'd love to just hear some advice from you guys. Crystal, I'd love to hear, like, what's your advice maybe for other composers starting out? You know, what should they be doing? And then Alex, your advice, and both of you, on the best practices for collaborating, but then also, since it's your first feature, advice in general about getting to that point.
Okay. I don't feel like I'm in a position to give advice, but I will tell you what I've learned so far.
Okay, perfect.
And I think the biggest thing is patience, is that it takes a while, and to just do as much as you can, as often as you can, meet people and find stories that you find are interesting. And when you do end up with a project that you believe in, just give it your all, and I think it'll pay off for you. And luckily for me, it has so far with this one. But I think it takes time to build relationships, to build your skill set. And I think that it's just a process that will continue throughout. I mean, I'm anticipating a continuation of my experiences for the rest of my career, is that I will always be looking for a great project and great people to work with, and hopefully continuing to work with the people I already have, and just giving things time.
But before you do that, there were some things I noticed at the premiere that I just wanted to change. So I thought maybe we could make some more.
Yeah, sure. I mean, open up the edit. That's fine.
Your patience, her patience with me is amazing. No, it sounded amazing at the premiere. I'm absolutely just making another bad joke.
It just goes hand in hand with
my bad jokes and your good music.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. They work really well together.
They do.
Yeah, I mean, it did sound like there was just such a ease of working between the two of you. Like, you know, do you have any tips for people on how to make that relationship so effortless or fruitful?
Well, I want to make a joke, but
did I interrupt your joke? You really got to it, and then I was like,
"No,
I was trying to steer the interview a certain way."
I know you were trying to, you know, give the listeners what they wanted, and I just wanted to hear myself make dumb jokes. But so no, I will answer your question. The truth is, in all filmmaking, I think to have the concept of best idea wins is awesome, to work with people that don't have egos. And that, listen, we all, whether we have egos or not, we all have sensitivities. We're all going to be insecure. We're all going to be in our own heads. There are going to be so many times that you're going to step onto a set or into an edit room or into a meeting thinking, I'm not good enough, or I'm not going to be able to pull this off. Like, I'm not a real artist. There's all of those kinds of things that go through all of our heads. And it's so easy to take that energy and get super defensive and shut everybody down and put everything on yourself, and or just say like, just get really tunnel vision. And that's the worst thing you can do. So even if you don't have a big ego, you can accidentally squash amazing collaborations by being afraid. But if you're not afraid of what other people have to bring, you know, if you can appreciate the fact that you have talented people working with you, then you're gonna benefit so much from it. And you can stop putting it all on yourself. You can stop thinking, I don't care what they bring to the table. It all has to be mine, mine, mine. Wrong industry, go write a book. This is a collaborative art. So you work with people who you're not afraid to hear their ideas, and you can objectively assess what the best idea is after everybody put theirs on their table.
Yeah, I think that says a lot, because it can be, you can end up feeling very vulnerable in this. You know, like I would get nervous. I'd send some new piece of music off to Alex, and I'm just waiting in anxious anticipation to find out, did he like it? And knowing that it's okay if he doesn't like it, that
yeah,
it's, we'll do it again. And it's not a personal thing. It's we need to work together to make the best movie we can. And realizing that will, I think, help you so much with collaborations. That's something that I think everybody has to catch themselves and remind themselves of, because when you're working on something and maybe you love it, you think it's perfect, you think it's the best thing in the world, and somebody's just like, nope. And you've got to be able to try again.
Or even if you don't think it's perfect, but you just need it to be perfect. You're just so desperate for it to be the final result, because you're comparing it to the movies that you watch and the TV shows that you watch, but you're a work in progress. So stop comparing your work in progress to the finished product of something else. Keep progressing until it's done. It's amazing how we so many times think like it needs to be right now. It's like, no, this is a process. This is, you know, we're doing improv. We're finding what's good, what's not good. Those 3 hours of our interview that we've just had on this podcast of me rambling and saying useless information, we're going to edit it all out. And I'm going to sound like, you know, I on occasion have something to share. And that's because this is a process. Your shit doesn't have to be perfect. It certainly doesn't have to be perfect in progress. It, you know, it'll get there. Just don't shut anybody down, because they might bring you that next great freaking idea that will make your thing so much better. For me, it was, you know, listening to a composer.
Yeah, that's really refreshing to hear. I just want to say thank you guys so much for sitting down and talking with us.
Thank you. This was great.
Thank you. We didn't plug it enough. Aspergers are us.
Yeah, that's right. Aspergers are us. Aspergers Congratulations. Are us. It's playing in competition at the festival. I know the 11:30 screening today was sold out.
Yeah.
It was sold out. It was a great screening. Yeah, that was the second screening.
That was so cool.
Yeah, and I know it's also just been picked up by Netflix. So congratulations. Yeah. You guys have really done something great, and, you know, can't wait to watch it. And our listeners, hopefully keep your eyes out. This is a great film.
Yeah, thank you so much.
Thank you. Yeah, we hope that you watch it and that you enjoy it.
And we want to listen to your podcast some more.
Me too. Or thank you. You can find more No Film School podcasts, like our Indie Film Weekly, a weekly recap of everything important in independent film that week, on iTunes, Pocket Cast, anywhere you find this kind of thing, we're there. We're new to the podcast scene, so check us out, subscribe, rate us, give us feedback, and thank you for listening.